Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If you just ask yourself the question, is it possible that alcohol is keeping me from the life that I want to live? And there's any sort of curiosity in your belly, in your gut, in your soul that it might be yes, I think that you owe it to yourself to have an exploration, even if it feels very uncomfortable and very vulnerable, because it is just something that can be a game changer in your life.
You are here for a reason, but navigating this human life can be challenging. How do you care for your body, mind, and spirit to make the most of your time here on Earth? How can you harness your incredible human potential? In this podcast, we explore these questions and more to help you craft your best life yet. Welcome to I Am Human. Hello, amazing, beautiful, vibrant humans. My name is Dr. Yami, and I am your host. Welcome to another episode of I Am Human. I so appreciate you being here. If you have not already, please subscribe to the channel and please rate and review this podcast. I would greatly appreciate it. And even better, I would love it if you share this episode or any other episodes that you've loved with somebody else that you feel may benefit from it. To be human means to use substances such as alcohol or processes or distractions to numb our emotions because they feel intolerable. But to be human also means to become a master feeler, to learn to accept, tolerate, and process emotions in order to optimize your life. Our guest, Amanda Kuda, today she's a master feeler and she is an alcohol-free lifestyle expert. She's a holistic life coach, speaker, and author living and working and playing in Austin, Texas. As a coach, Amanda helps ambitious, soul-centered women stop drinking and start manifesting the life they deserve and desire. She teaches a modern approach to personal development, self-actualization, and spiritual enlightenment through the lens of elective sobriety. Amanda's first book, Unbottled Potential, Break Up with Alcohol and Break Through Your Best Life, is out now and available wherever books are sold. Her work has been featured on CNN, Business Insider, and The Skim. I had a fantastic conversation with Amanda, and this is the second time I've had this topic on the podcast, but this is the first time that it's been with the focus on complete sobriety, so abstaining from alcohol. But I also just love how her book really covers that spiritual and personal development side as to why it might be a good idea or a consideration to consider giving up alcohol. We talked about her journey into removing alcohol from her life and how she started drinking. We talk about what the stats are on people that struggle with alcohol but aren't considered, you know, alcoholic or having an alcohol substance use disorder. We talk about how it usually evolves that people develop this strained relationship with alcohol and define the term sober curious and why more people might be interested in that. We also talk about what you need to ask yourself to determine if you may fall into this category of people who may want to consider quitting, and moderation. Is moderation a good option? And then we talk about emotions. We talk about tolerating boredom. We talk about vibrational energy states and authenticity. It's a really rich conversation. I know that you're going to get a lot out of it. And if you are somebody that's thinking, you know, I want to give it a try, reach out to Amanda. Take her quiz. We're going to provide the link below and just see if you are somebody that might benefit from this. And, you know, no judgment, just like anything else, everybody probably has something that they use, something that they're using to get through life, to numb themselves, and to not feel, because emotions can be really hard and heavy and they can be difficult to just sit with. So, I hope you love this episode. Thank you so much for joining me today. And now let's welcome Amanda Kuda. The information on this podcast is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not meant to replace careful evaluation and treatment. If you have concerns about your health or well-being, please consult a healthcare professional. This podcast episode contains sensitive topics that may be triggering to certain people. Listener discretion is advised. Amanda Kuda, welcome to I Am Human. I am so excited to have this conversation with you today.
Oh, me as well. Thank you so much for having me.
So I want to start with your background story. So tell me about your journey with alcohol and your transition to becoming a non-drinker. How did that happen? And how are you where you are today?
Yes. Thank you so much for asking. It's quite unexpected. And I think that it's something a lot of people can relate to, because to cut to the end of the story, I'm a casual drinker who now is a non-drinker. And this came from a lot of self-introspection and a lot of internal struggle that I did, not quite wanting to take that step, because alcohol is so normalized in our society. And if I go all the way back to my origin story with alcohol, when I started drinking, I remember being in my late teens, wanting desperately to fit in with my peers and feeling like I didn't, and then finding this magic serum that somehow made me feel like I was just one of the crowd, and that I could be like everyone else, and that I was no longer this weird, eccentric kid, that now I had the permission slip to be whatever I wanted to be and not feel anxious about it. And I carried that throughout my college years, throughout my 20s and into my late 30s, when I finally started to really, really focus on figuring out how to live the life that I wanted to live. I found myself in my late 30s with a great job. I was getting all of these promotions and attagirls and pats on the back at my corporate job. And yet something didn't feel right. Something felt out of alignment. I didn't feel like I was living the life that I was supposed to live. And I know now that I was essentially having an existential crisis, but I didn't have words for that in my 30s. And I kept trying to input all of these activities that I was reading about in self-help books to make my life better, more optimized. I was working out. I was counting my nutrition. I was, you know, really analyzing my nutrition. I was meditating. I was going to yoga. I was reading spiritual books, and nothing seemed to really move the needle. And so I started to get really frustrated and wonder, am I broken? Is there something wrong with me? Am I doomed for failure? Do I have some sort of like karmic wound that I just am never going to have this success? And then I realized that maybe I was running the equation wrong, and it wasn't so much about what I was adding to my life, but what I might need to subtract. And at that time, the really, really suboptimal thing that was in my life was my social relationship with alcohol. And so while I was doing all of these amazing things, racking up points, as it were, during the week, I was doing this really, really detracting activity on the weekend, which was going out, partying, and drinking alcohol. But no one told me that was wrong, because everyone else was doing it. And so right around the time I turned 30, reached my early 30s, I just thought, this can't be it. This can't be all there is to it. I've done everything that I can think of to make my life better, except for the one thing I really don't want to do, because my proof says that I will be a weirdo if I do this. But I decided to stop drinking, even though I didn't have a problem, even though there was nothing abnormal about my relationship with alcohol. And I'll tell you what, that one decision completely changed the trajectory of my life. And so the work that I do today is to help other casual social drinkers remove alcohol from the picture as a way to step into their potential.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And I think it's really important to distinguish to the listeners that you never considered yourself an alcoholic. Like you didn't think, okay, this is ruining my life. I'm on the street. You didn't hit this like rock bottom moment that we traditionally think of, right? When people are like, okay, this is it. I have to make a change. It was more that what it sounds to me that you were optimizing everything in your life and your soul really wanted to feel at its highest vibration, which we're going to talk about vibrational states later. I'm so excited about that. And you were like, this is the one area. But while you were thinking, while you were talking, I was also thinking about lifestyle medicine because I am board certified in lifestyle medicine. And one of the things that's really important to understand about lifestyle medicine is that we all have like our favorite pillar. Mine's nutrition. Like that's my favorite thing to optimize and talk about and everything. But there's actually six pillars of lifestyle medicine. So it includes sleep and exercise, you know, make sure you're moving your body in a joyful way. Connection, that's really important. Stress management. And one of them is risky substances, which is very prevalent. So I know we're going to talk about alcohol today, but there's other ones too, especially now where marijuana is becoming legalized in so many places. That's another risky substance that people might be struggling with. So I'd like to know, are there any stats on how many people struggle with alcohol? So they have this maybe strained relationship, this like love-hate relationship, but they're not considered alcoholic. Is there any data on that?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, it is the largest portion of drinkers fall into that category. It's called the gray area, right? And we always want to think that, you know, the people who are alcoholics or who have alcohol use disorder is what, you know, the technical term is now, is makes up the large portion of people who have, you know, would maybe benefit from quitting alcohol. And the reality is, if you were to take that and put it into a Venn diagram, that they would just be a tiny sliver on one of the sides. And the biggest part, the overlap, it wouldn't look like a traditional Venn diagram. It would look like a Venn diagram where there's almost a full moon in the center and the sides are just little slivers. And they represent people who are every now and again, take it or leave it drinkers and people who have, you know, drink on the addiction spectrum. Everyone else really is falling into that middle stage where sometimes you drink a little bit more than you want. Maybe you drink on a regular but moderate basis, but you're still drinking pretty consistently. Or maybe you're like me and you waited until the weekend and really tied one on. And this is completely normalized in our society because most of these people could quit if they wanted to. They haven't seen some of the consequences of hitting quote unquote rock bottom. But let's be clear, there were definitely consequences for me. They just didn't indicate that I necessarily needed to stop. I was still managing those consequences and getting and rebounding from them very well. But yeah, most people who drink alcohol are falling into this gray area, which is a really important area for us to start looking at in the health spectrum.
Wow. Thanks for clarifying that because I actually was not aware of that. But now that makes sense because you're talking about a Venn diagram and I'm thinking about a normal curve in my head. And, you know, I'm thinking about these extremes. So we have the extremes of the people that they literally, they're not functioning. They, you know, they're doing everything they can to drink.
Yeah.
I'm actually on the other extreme, believe it or not.
Uh-huh.
So you're the second person that I've talked to about alcohol on this channel. And I love talking about this because it really helps me because my substance is food. But alcohol, like literally I have an aversion. So like I actually, in my 20s, this is going to sound crazy. I tried to learn how to become a drinker. Like I was like, okay, I just need to find my drink. I need to find a drink so that I can drink when everybody's drinking. And my husband, because I got married when I was 21. So like he's been on me the whole journey and he'd be like rolling his eyes. We're like, ugh. Well, I guess I'm going to have to drink your drink too. Cause I would only make it through like two sips. I'd be like, ugh, I can't drink anymore. So you can take the rest. I never found my drink. And finally I'm like, this is dumb. Why am I trying to do this? Like,
yes.
Just don't drink. It's fine. You know, but isn't that funny? Like even a person like me, which had an aversion to alcohol, felt that pressure, you know? So I can imagine the people that actually like alcohol. It's so easy to get pulled into it because everybody's doing it. You want to fit in. You just want to drink with everybody, having a good old time. So I think that's really interesting. So tell me, you kind of told me about your story, but what's the typical way that people develop this? I mean, are they usually starting in their teens and 20s and then it's just kind of going over time? Or how are people developing this relationship with alcohol?
quite often it does start kind of at, in that rite of passage timeline where you're just getting your independence and, you know, everyone is experimenting with different risky behaviors or different things that you're now like coming of age and it's okay to do. And so, yeah, absolutely a lot in that late teens, early 20s. But honestly, some of my clients are people who didn't drink throughout college very much. They were very straight laced. And then as they entered motherhood, there was this mommy wine culture pressure. So there's all different routes, but almost all of them have to do with how do I fit in and how do I manage my emotions? My emotions are too big. My emotions are intense. I need some way to curb the anxiety of social pressure. I need something to unwind or check out after the end of a long day, or I deserve this because I've dealt with so much normal life by the end of the week or by the end of the day. And we just receive all of these messages that say, hey, this is the cure. You need this. This is the quick fix. And it couldn't be more of a lie, but it's such an easy one to believe.
For sure. I'm a pediatrician. So I get exposed to real-time anxiety. I'm a mother as well. So I know it's the hardest job in the world and I've done lots of different things. But it is such an easy time to get pulled into that lull of, you know, the alcohol and the soothing and that routine of like, okay, I made another day. My kids are alive. Everybody's fed. Now I need this time for myself. And yes, it usually involves a glass of wine. I live also in wine country here. So there's lots of, you know, fancy wines and all this things that people like to indulge in. But I can see how it's just so easy to get into that routine.
Absolutely. And it's a lot of us are taught as a friend, that's what you give your girlfriend if she is stressed out, heartbroken, whatever. And so we have people pushing it on us because not only do they think that that's a solution, but maybe they're not equipped to deal with our emotions or our stress or give us any sort of guidance or support in the way that we need it. So their solution is also, oh, here, take this. Your problem is scary to me. Let's wash it down. And it's then we just get in this habitual cycle.
Yeah. Along with Ben and Jerry's. So,
oh yes. Which is still a vice of mine.
Okay. So let's talk about this term sober curious. Are more people becoming sober curious? And if so, why do you think that is?
Absolutely. You know, sober curious is a term that was coined by a friend of mine, Ruby Warrington, and she wrote a book on it several years back because she needed a term to explain what her relationship with alcohol was. And she was curious about sobriety, but she wasn't ready to commit to it 100% because it does feel really intimidating to say, I'm never going to drink again. And that often isn't productive for someone who's exploring their relationship with alcohol. So she started calling it sober curiosity. And this term really started to catch on, but specifically it started to get an uptick during the pandemic because of a couple of reasons. One is that people were in their houses and they were typically going one of two ways. They were either doubling down on their relationship with alcohol, or they were realizing, whoa, this is not sustainable. This is actually an opportunity for me to stop drinking because I don't have any social obligations. And so you had this really vast split, and often the people who doubled down then had to do a 180 and realize, oh, wait a second, I'm going into a dark hole. This isn't ending in the foreseeable future. I better figure out a way to be well. And on top of that, you had a lot of people who were in their homes creating content. So you had this uptick of creators who were talking about sobriety, where before, because of AA and the anonymity aspect, people were very, very quiet. It was a shameful topic. Then all of a sudden, you have all of these creators coming out and saying, I'm going to quit drinking. This is what it's like for me. This is a book that I read about sobriety. And you have all of these people normalizing it a little bit. And so the conversation just started to get really rich, and people were listening and people were paying attention. And for all of the, you know, not so amazing things that came out of that time frame, I think that it really brought a rise to this movement and gave people a permission slip to at least get more curious and explore this as a lifestyle.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're so right about that, that there was like for lots of different things, two extremes. I saw that in the food and fitness too. Like some people are like, well, this is my chance to indulge in every single snack ever created because yes, I'm feeling really anxious and stressed and life sucks. Or the people are like, oh, wow, this is my opportunity. I'm actually going to work out. I know I can't go to the gym, but I'm just going to work out at home. I'm going to eat healthy. And so it's almost like people just took these divergent paths. And isn't it funny that it was the exact same circumstance, which is something that gives you information about how our brain works, the exact same circumstance, and people could take completely opposite paths with that exact same circumstance.
Okay. You wrote in your book, you don't need to have a problem with alcohol for it to be a problem in your life. So let's talk about what kind of questions should someone ask themselves to determine if they might be better off without alcohol, or at least giving it a break for a while and trying it out, being curious about this journey.
Yes. I think the first thing that you might ask is, do I feel that in any way alcohol is holding me back from the life that I want to live? And I think that if you're listening to this, you probably already have a sense, and it's this little discomfort, this little sense of truth coming through in your body. And I know that I felt that, and I had to ask myself that uncomfortable question, because the traditional question is, do you have a problem with alcohol? Are you powerless over alcohol? And because my answer to that was no, I had to figure out a different question. And I couldn't help but realize that alcohol was holding me back from having the time, the energy, the confidence to do the things that I really wanted to do in this world. And I factored out rationally that if I at least had that time back, not only the time that I spent thinking about drinking, the time I spent drinking, and the time I spent recovering from drinking, that I had to make some sort of win with that gain. And I had no idea all of the other things that would surface for me as opportunities with alcohol out of the way. But if you just ask yourself the question, is it possible that alcohol is keeping me from the life that I want to live? And there's any sort of curiosity in your belly, in your gut, in your soul that it might be yes, I think that you owe it to yourself to have an exploration, even if it feels very uncomfortable and very vulnerable, because it is just something that can be a game changer in your life.
And I think you're right. I think you have to get really quiet, and you have to go to that honest part of yourself that's going to tell you the truth, because you are going to have lots of resistance, right? I mean, it's just, there's so many things, especially in your primitive brain, telling you, no, I'm fine. I can't do without it. It's part of my work. It's part of my social life, whatever. And so I think really getting quiet and dropping down into yourself and saying, okay, like, what's the honest truth here? Let's start with just this question, and then we'll just take it step by step after that.
Absolutely.
Okay. So another quote from your book, which, by the way, I loved reading your book. Great book.
Amazing. Thank
you. Unexpectedly spiritual, which I was like, yes, love it. I realized that I was nothing more than the normal, albeit heavy at times, social drinker. It was clear that there was nothing abnormal about my drinking habits. Every other young social woman was drinking just as much as, if not more than, I was. Which you kind of said earlier, this is very common. Most people are inside this big part of the Venn diagram. So if drinking is so normalized and prevalent, should people learn how to consume alcohol with moderation?
That is the big question. And you know what? I will say that that is what I thought I wanted so badly when I started to explore my relationship with alcohol. I thought I wanted to be like you, someone who could, you know, take it or leave it, but preferred to leave it. And I had this desire of what my relationship with alcohol could look like. And not that moderation is bad, but you know, as a doctor, that there are so many organizations, all of the World Health Organizations actually now are coming out and changing their tune as to what amount of alcohol is okay. And the answer is now none. None. It is a carcinogen and it is not healthy. Even in moderation, people cannot. It's not okay to tout that. And so I would be irresponsible if I said yes. However, is it impossible? No, absolutely. You can moderate and see probably what you would assume are minimal health effects, but there's so much going on behind the scenes that on a body, mind, soul level that I can't say, yes, you should shoot for moderation, because when you bring alcohol into your system, your body has to do so much to process and fight off this toxin that it has to put so many other really important processes in the background. So if you're someone who's trying to live healthier, maybe you have I work with a lot of people who have a chronic health condition or an autoimmune, and alcohol is their reprieve from this like senseless, you know, seemingly never ending pain or frustration that they have. And yet it's taking your body's attention away from its healing. And so there's all of this, you know, data that's coming to the forefront that's saying, you know, alcohol isn't really great for us, but on the bigger picture, it's making your mind less resilient. And so it's making it to where you are not able to deal with adversity just in a regular day, not only when you're drinking, not only when you're hungover, but it's functionally, it's changing the way that you respond to things. Now you can switch, you know, your brain has neuroplasticity, but you are making it to where you're just stressed and you're less available to deal with that stress every single day. And that just puts you back in the vicious cycle, because what are you doing then? You're drinking more alcohol to deal with the stress that you weren't equipped to deal with because you were slightly foggy or hungover. And I just wouldn't wish that for anyone. What I would wish for anyone is that they have the tools to naturally deal with the things that are ailing them. And I know that it's possible. Of course, there are some situations where you will need different support and different interventions, but so many of the things that we need in order to deal with day-to-day life, stress, and all of those things are completely free. It's just that they aren't as quick of a shutoff valve as alcohol is immediately. And my mission is to really help people see that they can be so incredibly powerful without alcohol. Not that alcohol is bad or wrong or evil, but I want you to feel so good that it's not even a question as to, should I have it a little bit some of the time? It's, I don't want that because I feel so amazing. And once you feel that, it's just a really powerful feeling.
Yeah. Then it doesn't become this internal struggle. You're not white knuckling it. It's more right. Like I choose this reality versus this reality.
Green Chef is the number one meal kit for eating well, delivering pre-portioned and prepped quality whole foods with limited process ingredients. Green Chef sends organic, fresh produce and chef-designed recipes in every box for satisfying, nourishing, and convenient meals that make it easy to stick to a healthy living routine. Find recipes for every lifestyle, including plant-based diets. Green Chef delivers quality whole foods with limited process ingredients, including low added sugar and sodium smart options. Choose from 80 plus flavor packed options and take back time in your kitchen with dinner ready in 30 minutes and lunch in 10. Try 15 plus new recipes every week. Green Chef will deliver everything you need to make convenient, wholesome, and delicious meals directly to your doorstep. Each meal kit includes pre-measured ingredients, some produce which is pre-chopped, and custom sauces that are pre-made in-house. They also provide the recipe cards, and the meals are really simple to make. It's a delicious, fresh, home-cooked meal without the hassle. We've really enjoyed using Green Chef, trying out all the delicious recipes, as well as saving time. It takes a lot of the work out of planning meals and gathering the proper ingredients so that you can just cook and enjoy your meal. It's a great option for busy families that want fresh, home-cooked, healthy meals to put on the table. And I know a lot of us worry about waste, and we do everything we can to reduce waste. So this may be one of your hesitations when subscribing to this type of service. Well, Green Chef also cares about the planet. April is Earth Month, and sustainability is a core to the Green Chef brand. Green Chef offsets 100% of delivery emissions and 100% of plastic in each box. Green Chef also partners with Plastic Bank to collect ocean-bound plastic pound for pound for every box they deliver. If you're frustrated by lack of time to eat healthy and you are ready to try Green Chef and see how easily you can integrate it into your healthy lifestyle, go to greenchef.com/IAMHuman50, that's IAMHuman50, and use code IAMHuman50, IAMHuman50, to get 50% off plus 20% off your next 2 months. So go to greenchef.com/IAMHuman50 and use code IAMHuman50 to get 50% off plus 20% off your next 2 months. Green Chef, the number one meal kit for eating well. I know you're busy. So am I. But do you have 2 minutes? If you have just 2 minutes, you have enough time to eat healthy, nutritious meals. The solution to your overscheduled life is Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. These meals are chef-crafted, fresh, and never frozen, and they are delivered straight to your doorstep. They offer a weekly menu of 35 options, including vegan and veggie meals. They also have 60 add-ons each week, including breakfast, snacks, and beverages like smoothies and juices. The fresh juice shots are so good. This week, I got to try the peanut Buddha bowl that had sweet potatoes, broccoli, quinoa, veggies, and a yummy peanut sauce, and the tangy citrus tofu bowl that included cauliflower rice, sweet potato, tofu, edamame, chickpeas, and a tangy citrus sauce. They were super yummy. My husband and my son loved them too. The meals feature premium ingredients, and because they are fully prepared and ready to heat, it eliminates the hassle of prepping, cooking, and cleaning up. It's an amazing option for those seasons in life that are particularly time constrained. You can also pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle. In April, Factor is celebrating Earth Day all month long and will use Earth Month Eats badges on their lowest carbon footprint meals. Are you ready to try Factor? Head to factormeals.com/DrYami50, that's DRYAMI50, and use code DrYami50, that's DRYAMI50, and get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code DrYami50 at factormeals.com/DrYami50, that's DRYAMI50, to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Equilibria is a woman-owned wellness brand with products intended to bring your mind and body back in harmony. They consider themselves a by women and for women company, and they now offer a nutrient-dense green powder called Daily Nutri-Greens. Myself and my staff here at Nourish Wellness all tried the Daily Nutri-Greens and we loved it. The Daily Nutri-Greens contain an immune antioxidant and detox blend along with prebiotics, probiotics, and over 35 fruits and veggies. It also contains other important nutrients such as B12, iron, zinc, and selenium. The Daily Greens are certified organic and all you have to do is mix it with water, but you can also easily add to your smoothies, your oatmeal, or your baked goods. The Daily Nutri-Greens are vegan, gluten-free, and non-GMO. And another bonus is that the packaging is compostable. Yay! When I tried the apple banana Daily Nutri-Greens, I was surprised by the pleasant and mild flavor. It was easy to prepare and drink and didn't leave any aftertaste. And I felt great afterwards. It's really easy to create a daily ritual around your green drink. Integrate it into your daily self-care routine. A green powder is one way to fill the gap in daily nutrition and is an easy and convenient way to get in your greens. These powders are a great way to add more nutrients into your diet during busy times, travel, and transitions in life when you don't have time or access to fresh green veggies. If you're interested in trying Equilibria's Daily Nutri-Greens, head to myeq.com and use code DrYami, that's DrYAMI, for 15% off Equilibria's Daily Nutri-Greens and much more. That's myeq.com and use code DrYami, DrYAMI, at checkout for 15% off site-wide today.
I want to go back to something that's really interesting. I don't know if you've seen these studies before, but they are pretty fascinating. Do you know how most people define moderation?
Ooh, tell me what most people are saying.
It's the amount that they consume.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
So that comes for anything. Like, how many cookies is a moderate amount of cookies? Well, I usually take two, so it's two. Or four, if I take four. So the problem with moderation is that we are going to justify whatever it is that we consume as being a moderate amount. So I think for one, that's a tough place to start with this concept. But I wholeheartedly agree with you. And not just because I'm a person who has an aversion to alcohol. So I feel bad sometimes because it's very easy for me. But especially in the health world, there have been mixed messages, right? Like, oh, wine has all these antioxidants. Well, what people don't realize is that those antioxidants came from the grapes. So you can eat the grapes that have not been fermented. It's completely fine. You do not have to drink the wine. And the World Health Organization has come out to say any amount of alcohol increases your risk of cancer. So that's kind of what happened in my life too. It's like, okay, why am I trying to become a drinker when this is clearly a toxin? And we know by the laws of oxidative priority, whenever we consume a toxin, because it's a toxin, your body is going to prioritize metabolizing it and getting it out of your body.
Yes.
So during that time that you're trying to cleanse yourself of this toxin, it has to shut down everything else. And I'm just going to throw this one in yeah. case people don't know. If you are drinking alcohol while consuming a high fat food, which is usually the case, right? People are drinking with like chips and guacamole and stuff like that. Your body is not going to metabolize that fat. It's going to go straight into storage because that's the easiest thing to do.
Yep.
So just so you know, yeah, it's a bad combo. And yeah, I mean, it's hard to say it because I agree with you. I don't want to demonize alcohol. We've been drinking it for centuries and people aren't bad because they choose to drink it. But it's time for us to kind of wake up to the reality that maybe this isn't as good for us as we thought it was. And what would it feel like if we weren't consuming this on a regular basis? What would it feel like in our bodies? So I want to move on to emotions because this is kind of the bulk of what we have to deal with on this journey. You wrote in your book that our emotions are sacred. What does that mean? And why do you think that we struggle so much with feeling our emotions, not just the negative ones, but also the positive ones?
Oh, you know, we just live in a society where probably, unless you grew up in a very open and emotionally safe household, you were taught to stifle your emotions, especially as women, because they're too big. It's inappropriate. You're not going to get anywhere. You can't be, you know, you can't show those emotions. Either they're, you know, the B word, or you're just overly emotional or dramatic. And, you know, men get this too, for sure, and with different words, but it is something we just weren't taught to do. So we're taught to stifle these emotions down, and then we're let out into the world as adolescents with no tools by which to deal with them, you know, the most volatile time in our emotional lives for most of us. And then we go into adulthood with nothing, but somewhere in the mix, you know, especially if you're like me and you started drinking in your adolescence, you get this tool that's alcohol that helps you kind of bypass and deal with them. So you may have been cheating, for me, a lot of my adult life and not fully processing emotions. That doesn't mean that I didn't have them come up, but I tried to get rid of them pretty quickly, like they were a hot potato. And I have to trust that you would not have had an emotion put in your body, the ability to feel it with intensity, if it weren't important. And I think that that is part of the biggest, one of the most fulfilling things about the life experience is that you get to feel and have these emotions. And if we run from one of them, we're running from all of them. So, you know, Brené Brown has this beautiful quote that you numb the dark and you numb the light. And so when we're trying to numb grief, anxiety, pressure, stress, you're also numbing the capacity at which you could feel happiness, joy, love, elation. And sometimes we don't realize it. And I know I certainly didn't realize it until alcohol was out of the picture. And then all of a sudden, I'm left with these emotions that I had been bottling up and lugging around for years. And it was hard and it was scary and it was heavy because all of a sudden, I have all of this stuff that I need to deal with and I need to feel. And I just think that we discount that in our society. We've said that we're bad and wrong for having these emotions or feeling these emotions or sharing these emotions or that they're unsavory. And yet some of my most powerful moments have been when I've actually let myself experience deep, deep grief and sadness, or also happiness and joy at a level that I never had experienced it before. And it's so, you know, this sounds very Pollyanna of me, but it's so cool to have that, you know, juxtaposition in your body that you can feel and experience these things. But also it's overwhelming if you've never sat and experienced them. And I just would want for anyone to have a full life. And I think that having a full life means that you're feeling everything.
And you're right. I think that from a young age, we believe that whenever we're feeling something, it's going to last forever, especially when we're having negative emotions. And I think that's when we start to pick up some of these habits too. Like for me, it was food. You know, food has been my soothing pacifier. For some people, it's going to be social media. It's going to be all kinds of different things that help distract us and take us away from that sensation. But don't you think that with alcohol, especially, it can become a vicious cycle, right? Because you're drinking. Alcohol is a depressant. So in some ways, it's going to like really flub up your emotions. Then you're going to be hungover and feel bad about that, which means you got to drink more to feel better. Can it become a vicious cycle too?
It's absolutely a vicious cycle. And I mean, I remember for me, on, let's say, like night A, I would drink because I wasn't feeling so great. Maybe I was, you know, pining over a boy or upset about something at work, then I would drink and it would go away, but then it would boomerang. And let me tell you what, that boomerang, when it came back, ooh, that was a gnarly one. I would feel sad, wrong, you know, like no one liked me and I was completely unlovable. And then at that point, I just didn't feel good physically. So I didn't have the wherewithal to do anything about it. I couldn't even like really move my body and move the emotions at all. I actually put myself in a rut thinking I was doing myself a favor. And, you know, we think that the only logical way our brain knows at that time to get out of the rut is to drink again. And it's absolutely a vicious cycle. And it's so interesting to see it now from a bird's eye view. Some of the things that I thought were logical and helpful were actually the things that were fully keeping me stuck in this really kind of horrific experience quite often.
Yeah. And I think it's important for listeners to understand that we're doing this because we think it's helping us. And we're trying to protect ourselves from something that feels painful, but it's just a dysfunctional pattern, you know? And so just realizing that and learning it and being like, okay, do I want to continue with this pattern or do I want to find a different way, which takes effort and it takes time and it takes patience, but at the end of the day, it's worth it. And like you said, experiencing all those different emotions, even though they can be really intense, is a privilege, right? It's a privilege of being human. It's a privilege of being able to experience this, you know, broad range of dynamic emotions. I love this concept of beauty and boredom. Tell me what that means.
Yes. So one of the things that I get so often from my clients is that they are afraid to feel bored, or that they're starting to feel bored in their sobriety. And it's terrifying to them because, you know, especially now we live in a society of constant stimulation. So you always have a screen or something to take your mind off of whatever your mind is on. And if you have been numbing yourself and numbing out your emotions for a significant period of time, or your social life, even something as small as your social life has always revolved around alcohol, and all of a sudden you don't have that anymore, so you decide perhaps to take a step back from your social activities, you're going to have some space that you need to fill. And the first thing your mind does is like, oh, wait, we have something you've had in the storage unit for a while. Let's think about this. And it's scary to be bored because then your mind starts to ruminate on things that maybe you were not quite ready to think about. But yet there's so much beauty in the space of boredom because that's where creativity comes from. How many things did we see during the pandemic where people came out of these, like, you saw all of these creators coming out and making these beautiful, you know, dances, songs, comedy bits that we may never have seen, but that sprung from boredom and having to sit with your feelings and sit with your thoughts and decide to either go down into a dark hole or do something with it. And I think that boredom can be this like fertile ground for creating something really amazing, or dipping into creativity, or even dreaming about something that you had never allowed yourself to dream about before. And yes, also processing some maybe intense and difficult emotions. But boredom for me is this space that I get to create from. And sometimes when I just sit there with that silence, with that boredom, and I don't pull up my phone and scroll or don't throw on the Netflix or whatever, wow, some really amazing thoughts come from that, because our brain is so brilliant if we just let it do its thing, right? And so often we are trying to keep it busy with other stuff. And when you have this juicy moment of, hey, there's nothing there, I don't have to do anything or have anywhere to be, you can come up with some really great thoughts. And I think that that is just so special.
Yeah, I love that. And it really does sound beautiful to me. And I think about this for myself in overfilling my calendar. So my stimulation is working and just doing. And so that stillness is almost something that I've avoided because I didn't properly learn to process just all those feelings inside of me, you know, feelings of unworthiness or loneliness or whatever. And so it really is taking you to the next level when you can learn to experience it and let it flow over you and tolerate them. So I think this is such an important concept, because I think a lot of us don't realize that we avoid that. We avoid the stillness. We avoid the boredom. We avoid the monotony. We just want to fill ourselves with doing and doing and substances and whatever it is to distract us from any of those feelings. So thank you for bringing up that concept. Okay, let's talk about energy and vibration.
Ooh,
so what is an energetic vibrational state, and how may alcohol affect it?
Yes. And this is one of my favorite things to talk about, and also one of the more controversial things to talk about, because it's a little woo, as they say on the internet. And I know that everything has an energetic vibration. Every choice you make, every action, every person you surround yourself with, every event, every item, there's always an energetic vibration to it. And certainly you've gone into a space and either felt really uplifted by the space or felt a little cringe and when you're in the room. And this is just an energetic vibration. And this isn't bad or wrong. This isn't good or bad. This is just high and low vibrations. And no matter what way you look at it, alcohol is a low vibrational substance. It is a depressant. And so it's always going to lower your internal energetic vibration. So the way that I look at energetic vibration is kind of like a bank account. You're either going to do things that have a positive return or a negative return when you're making an investment. And the investment that you make in your life, you, of course, want to live a high vibrational life. I can guarantee that any dream or desire you have on your heart right now is probably at a higher vibrational level. But when we drink alcohol, we lower our own vibration and separate ourselves basically from the life that we desire. We pull ourselves further away from our high vibrational dreams, our high vibrational states. And it's really frustrating because so many of us, like you, I am also a go-getter, you know, overworker, overachiever, high achiever. Let's not even say over, just a high achiever. And I can get back to the high vibe dreams and desires that I have, but it's an uphill battle. Whereas when, just as an example, when I stopped drinking, so many of the things I wanted had felt like they were so far away and that I really needed to work for them very, very hard. And I am a hard worker, so that's okay. But the cool thing that happened when I stopped drinking and really worked on myself, and anytime you do any sort of self-work, spiritually, mentally, emotionally, physically, you're going to raise your own energetic vibration. And so what I found is very quickly, I started to become an energetic match for the things that were my dreams. And in that space, it just makes it to where you're not struggling so much to get the things you want in your life when you're living at this higher vibration. And I know it is very esoteric. It doesn't sound esoteric. It is. But once I've witnessed this so many times with people who remove alcohol from their being, their physical being, that they start to just surround themselves with higher vibrational, happier, more joyful experiences and opportunities. It's really cool and really interesting to see.
I love that. And yeah, I'm all about talking about the woo now. So that's why I rebranded my podcast, because I definitely think it's important to just even consider for the people, for listeners out there that you're like, oh, this is a little uncomfortable. It's not evidence-based. We don't have any evidence-based energy vibrational states here, but there is science that's starting to find this, you know? It's not out in the popular media yet, but it does exist. And I think you're so right. And the way that I think about it too is one of my big things in life is to serve and to motivate and inspire and empower other people. And I know that I'm going to be able to do that better when I take care of myself, because yes, I'm going to be in that higher vibrational state that's going to be able to radiate it to people around me so that it becomes a contagious thing. So it's really important, especially for people that have that servant-minded heart and, you know, their purpose in this lifetime, to know taking care of yourself is part of that service, because as you vibrate at a higher level, it's going to spread. And so it makes it worth it. But thank you for bringing that up and for talking about that in your book. Another really important topic is authenticity, which, as you said in your book, it has been a buzzword. So we're all talking about being authentic, and sometimes it's just about complaining or whatever. But what does authenticity mean to you? And how does an alcohol-free life help us embrace our true authenticity?
This was a topic that was difficult to write about because I knew that it was such a buzzword, and be authentic. And to some people, that means to speak your mind. And that's not how I represent or understand authenticity. It's being the you that you are meant to be instead of the you that the world told you you should be. And again, so important for women, also important for men, but you know, many women have taken on roles or worn masks to dilute themselves or be something that is more palatable to everyone else out in society, or be a good girl or whatever, you know, way that you took it on. For me, when I was coming of age, I binged the series Sex and the City. And so for me, Carrie Bradshaw was the icon of what it is to be a woman and what it is to be sexy and feminine. And so unwittingly, I kind of, you know, took that and made it my model for what does it mean to be a woman out in the world. And so that was always my North Star. And without knowing it, I started to mold my personality to be a little more like that. And while there's certainly characteristics that were me, I didn't realize that there are so many things that I did as, you know, just speaking for myself, as someone who is very empathic, who can sense what other people are feeling, but also a people pleaser. So then I shift my way of being in order to meet what I think is acceptable, and very much a social chameleon. And I didn't realize how much of my persona was me shape-shifting or wearing a mask or going into a character for what I perceive to be good, right, or popular in a certain situation. And I had this tremendous gift of a man who I dated in my late 20s who stopped one day and he said, you know, Amanda, I feel like sometimes when we're hanging out together that some of your responses are calculated. And I just felt, whoa, what a punch to the gut. That felt so, you know, dramatic. And then as I sat with it, I thought, you're right. You're right. So many of the things that I do are to please you and what I think you will think is, you know, attractive or whatever. And not just you, but many people in my life. And I realized that I was not being authentic. And alcohol was a tool that I used to sometimes slip into a character, to sometimes make myself forget some of my, you know, I told you I was kind of a unique, eccentric person as a teenager. And still, I think I'm a unique and eccentric person. And some of the ways that I, you know, when we drink, we can sometimes be this more outrageous personality. And it's okay because, oh, she's drinking. And so alcohol was this tool I used to make myself into what I thought was more acceptable. And when I removed it, I had to figure out, who am I underneath all of these masks, all of these characters, all of these roles that I've taken on? Who am I? And how do I show up as her and feel comfortable doing that? And that is what the game of life is about, is figuring out who you are and figuring out how you can show up as that person and feel comfortable and confident. And sometimes it also means finding different people who will celebrate you for that. Because what I realized so much was that so many of my friendships were superficial and maybe based on the persona that I portrayed in that group of people. And I've certainly kept, this was not what you asked, but I've certainly kept many of those friends from my drinking days. But I've also evolved and brought in new friendships who are magnetized and attracted to my authentic version of me. And I am just a champion for people showing up and taking off those masks, taking off those character roles that we take on, and figuring out who you are. And for me, it was really difficult to do that with alcohol in the picture because it muddied everything. And I found that a really powerful tool for figuring out who I was and how I show up in this world was to be very clear-headed. And that's evolving every day, but I'm so much more close to it than I was as a drinker who has always been kind of performative.
It's definitely a journey. I think that having the courage to be ourselves, it's really hard. And I don't know why. Why does it have to be so hard? We see little kids and they're okay with it. Yes. And they're okay to be themselves. I was just talking last night. I was training with my personal trainer and his little daughter, who's a toddler, was doing these amazing dance moves, because I always have to have my playlist playing because I can't work out unless I have my music. Okay. So I'm that kind of workout person. And she was like doing all these moves, and we were just commenting on how little children are not self-conscious when they dance, when they move. And then at a certain age, suddenly we're thinking about every single move we make. Is this right? Do I look weird? You know, I can't dance. And I think we're all born being able to move our bodies. And then at some point we lose that because we're overthinking everything. And so what I hear you saying is that alcohol just makes it easier to just be who you think you should be or what people want you to be, instead of really getting that courage to just be yourself and shine your true light.
Yes. Oh, well put, well summarized. And I just want everyone to shine at their brightest and be the person they were meant to be. And there's just such a beautiful trickle down effect that happens on our planet and in the world, even in our own little microcosms, when you get to do that. And it's just been such an impact in my life. And also to be able to witness that in others is such a gift.
What do you wish more people knew?
I wish that more people knew how brilliant and capable they are and how achievable their dreams are if they just get out of their own way. So even if you listen to this whole episode and you're like, well, I don't drink alcohol or that's not my thing, is there a thing that you have, a vice that you have in your life that is keeping you from showing up and living the dream that's on your heart? Because I promise, if you have a dream put on your heart, it is there for a reason. And it's not because it's impossible. It's because it's meant to be yours. And I just want people to know, I wish that they knew that all they have to do is get out of their own way, and that thing can be theirs at, you know, an unreasonable rate, what we would think is very unreasonable. And I want people to dream those unreasonable goals and know that they're actually quite within grasp.
So beautiful. How do you find success in this lifetime?
Oh, it's subjective. It's whatever it means to you. And I think that if you, you know, to go back to one of your earlier questions, we're talking about emotions. I think that one of the times, or many of the times, that I felt so successful is when I've been able to feel all of my emotions. And that includes feeling, and I'm feeling a little choked up, deep, deep grief and deep sadness, and knowing, wow, you have what it takes to make it through this. And what a joy, what a gift it is to feel this emotion, because it means that you loved someone or something. And I think that just having that ability to introspect and feel that feeling instead of run from it is one of the most successful things that I think I can do in this lifetime, is to just feel and let myself do that and let that be part of my human experience. And that, again, is, that's the success I would want for someone else too.
I love that. To become a master feeler.
Yes.
A master 100%. Feeler. Yeah. That's a big one. That's a really important concept. Okay. I'd love to know if there's a goal or a dream that has evaded you thus far, or if there's something that you have left on your bucket list that you'd like to share.
Oh, totally. When I started my spiritual journey, Oprah was the curator of all of the spiritual and knowledge keepers, and I think still kind of holds that title. I would love to just breathe the same air in the same room as Oprah, but it would be so great to collaborate with her in some way as well.
Oh, that would be amazing. Yes. I see no issue in that. I think that's definitely going to happen for you, because you're doing amazing work and your book is really, really good. So
thank you.
I'm going to visualize that for you too. I'm going to help you with that visualization. I can't wait till I see a post with you and Oprah soon.
Oh, that's me too. Me too.
What does it mean to be human?
Oh, wow. I feel like a broken record, but to feel all of your emotions, large to small, big, insurmountable to joyful, heavy to light. I think that that is just the epitome of the human experience, and to be proud of it instead of afraid of it.
Amanda, this has been fantastic. I've loved our conversation. I know that there's many listeners who are out there. They've asked themselves the question and they're like, oh, yeah, I'm curious about this. I'd like to see what my life is like without alcohol. Where can they connect with you? What products and services do you provide for people that feel like they may need a helping hand along this journey?
Yes, I am everywhere on the internet at Amanda Kuda. That's Kuda. And I have a book that's out called Unbottled Potential. But even if you just want to kind of dip your toe into the sober curious field, I have a free quiz that can help you determine what your sober curious calling is, what the thing is that maybe you is on the other side of your sober curiosity. And I think that I have heard it is very, very accurate for most people. And so that's just a quick and easy way to connect and dip your toe into some additional resources that are curated for you.
Awesome. And maybe we can put the link specifically to that quiz too. Totally. So people can go straight there and take the quiz, and then they're right there with you. Amanda, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much for joining me today and for all the work that you've been doing and putting your love and compassion and empathy out into the world to help other people be their best selves and just realize their dreams and this incarnation to everything that they imagined. So thank you so much. And I'm so grateful to meet you and have you on the show today.
Likewise. Thank you so much. Received. I'm Amanda Kuda and I am human.
Thank you for listening to another episode of I Am Human. I would be so honored if you subscribe to the podcast so that you never miss an episode. We love our listeners and take your feedback seriously. If you have questions or constructive feedback, you can email us at podcast@dryami.com. That's podcast@dryami.com. I am your host, Dr. Yami Cazorla Lancaster. I Am Human is produced by myself and Alejandra Parra. Graphics designed by Alejandra Parra. Music by Angela Sof with Glowbox Productions and edited by the Castos Production Team. Remember, human, you are here for a reason. Have fun, explore, and live your life to the fullest.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.